today we have kids who expect their parents to solve their problems for them, and we're not teaching them autonomy. We're taking away the whole concept of autonomy. We've taken autonomy away from teachers to be able to decide what goes on in their classrooms.
This is the Educational Triage Podcast. Welcome. We invite you to come along with us on an exploration of interviews, issues, and other exciting and relevant topics in education, especially alternative education. They say alternative education is a laboratory for mainstream education. Why? Well, join us every week and listen in as Philip Summers,
aloha,
and I, Tony Hunt, jump in feet first to discuss issues that may affect our classes, students, communities, as well as our teaching. Please subscribe if you enjoy and find relevance in what you experience here. And if you haven't left a quick review, please do. We appreciate your candor and insights so we can improve as we move forward. Now, let's see what's on board today.
And welcome back, everybody, to the Educational Triage Podcast. This is Tony, and I know that it's been a couple of weeks since we were last here. We've been on vacation, doing this and that and everything. So, Philip decided to choose something really meaty for us to reintroduce and re-enter into the podcastosphere. So,
podcastosphere, I like that.
So I am going to toss it over to the ineffable, the affable, the wonderful Philip. And Philip, welcome back.
Aloha, Tony. Hey. I have to correct you, though. You're the one that was on vacation. I, myself, was not vacating. I stayed where I was. But you're right. I got into the subject of, it just crossed my mind. What are the similarities and differences between a teacher and a therapist? Because of all the SEL, social emotional learning programs that are coming down the pike, as they say, and there was a survey done, and I mean, we'll have it in the notes. 9 in 10 teachers say they need more resources to care for students, and that means mostly, I think, that a lot of the therapist job is being put on teachers, and teachers are kind of agreeing with that.
Some teachers, I think, are agreeing with it. Maybe the younger ones, the ones who still have some pizzazz left in their lives.
Yeah, this is the blurred boundaries, and this is what it is. You know, when teachers start to they can't be therapists for kids. You know, I mean, I can't give you an hour session, just you and me and the kid, and prescribe you. I certainly can't do that. But that's what teachers are getting into lately. You know, they're not doing therapy, but they're hearing the same kinds of problems. And it's really kind of tough to deal with. They need the resources outside of being a teacher. Teacher's sort of the conduit, yeah.
Here's where the blur comes in, I think. And stop me if I'm wrong. Children come to school. The parents send their kids to school. And the teachers and the admin become, as we well know, in locus parentis. We become the sort of the parent figure,
local
the family
parent.
At the time. And while the kids are there for the 6-7 hours that they're with us, depending on what time the parents drop them off or the bus brings them and picks them up and takes them away. But school is usually 6 hours, which is pretty long considering other school systems and how long they keep their kids in school.
And their children, basically.
Right.
And schools are filled with children.
So teachers already, first it's pretty much the norm that teachers have their master's degree at least. Or at least
in
one
state
master's.
Of Oregon, at least, yeah, I know that much.
Well, California, there number of states require it.
I do not doubt it. We are highly trained
in curriculum.
Mm-hmm.
We are not highly trained in psychology, as I will also put down, a soft science. We are not school psychologists. We are not therapists. Yes. I don't care how much professional development you give us in social emotional learning and lessons in social emotional learning. We are not the people who should be delivering that kind of curriculum. I don't believe
any treatment at all.
I believe that teachers should be welcoming. They can be shoulders to cry on. They are mandatory reporters. We have grading that we have to do. We have ethics. We have boundaries. We have things that we have to get done with perhaps 150 different students per day, many times over 300 students within a period of 2 days. And now they're saying that we need to be trained in trauma-informed and that we need to learn how to deal with that. I'm sorry, but I do not have a degree in psychology. I do not have a degree in any kind of art or science that leads toward any form of therapy. I know that I can possibly do some pop psychology.
Yeah.
But when we have school districts want to spend money on cool stuff for cool kids.
Yeah.
They want, and if you look at a regular typical high school, and if you look at the literature that we're going to put down in the show notes, on average, there is one counselor for every 415 students.
That's very true. Yeah.
That's not enough. You might have one school psychologist for 2,000 students. Many times, the school psychologist is embedded with special ed, so they are spending most of their time working on special ed assessments and qualifying students for special ed. I have family members who are school psychologists, and their districts kept them in a closet office doing paperwork to prevent the school district from being sued. They did not do assessments. They did not meet with students. They did not do what they were supposed to be doing.
Well, let me say something about teachers' role. It's very comforting to me that the role of the teacher is defined. It has been defined for quite a while. Mm-hmm. And it's not – a teacher is sort of a source, a resource, and a conduit by which you enter the system. If I hear a student mandatory reporting as being beaten or neglected or abused, I have a mandatory reporting law that says I have to get involved there. I have to tell authorities. But I don't go to the home and get between the two of them or take the kid out of the home. That's not my role. And that's the role of a good teacher, is to know who to call, where to direct students. But as therapy goes, I taught classes in yoga. I taught classes and we looked at quantum physics, not in the mathematical way, but just all kinds of concepts and things. But I was not qualified to ever give anybody therapy, like cognitive behavioral therapy or anything like that. I would encourage CBT, but I certainly couldn't do it. It's not my job. And these kids, teachers need resources to send kids to, not be the resource.
Exactly. And we have teachers who are saying that they need to be trained better in order to facilitate these mental health issues that students have. And they want that in PD. And I'm sorry, I am going to fight tooth and nail against that, because already we had to be trained in trauma-informed teaching. We had to know what the trauma was for the students. And it's fine to be aware of that when we're working with students, especially in alternative ed, because we get so many of those students there. But then we also have other people who are coddling students. They're not helping the students. They recognize that the students have trauma, but they're not helping them. They're coddling them. Yeah. Rather than allowing them the resources in order to deal with the trauma so that they can move on.
There's an interesting note too. A lot of teachers think they should get involved with the mental health. However, 77 teachers say it's their responsibility to teach students about mental health and relevant self-care strategies.
How many? What percent?
77%.
77% responsibility
to include in their teaching. I'm assuming here. Talk to students about mental health and relevant self-care strategies. And so my points being made on this is, if you're into a certain thing or yoga, or you know nothing of yoga or any mindfulness or anything, you're still supposed to put this in. It's like, I've got a class to run. I'm very sensitive and I know a lot about this stuff, but it's kind of involved. I mean, you can teach maybe an opening SEL, social emotional learning lesson or something, but as far as like teaching kids mindfulness and acceptance of circumstance and just, you know, I mean, I don't want to tell a bunch of eighth graders, you know, life's going to kick your butt. And when you're out there, you know, you want to settle in, you want to clear your mind. It's kind of, I don't have the best approach. I like to share things that I've found with kids, but yeah, well, I want to teach kids about health and strategies, but I don't have that great a depth of knowledge of it.
Right. And I remember, and I've spoken of this, I think it was two seasons ago, mm-hmm. there was a teacher who used to lead off every one of her English classes with kind of a breathing and self-awareness kind of thing where the students are calmed down. And it was kind of like a real grounding experience, which I think I don't see a problem with that, because it's kind of like a really nice way to introduce your class.
Yeah.
Something like that.
I did yoga the same way. Yeah.
Right. So you just breathe and then you get into it.
Breathe, well, and mindfulness. And yeah.
The majority of staff made fun of this teacher.
That's no good.
especially the ones who claimed to be in tune with everything. And
who told them that?
I mean, they're kind of like the cool teachers. And
oh, the cool kids.
The ones who are against bullying were bullying this teacher. And she retired, and I saw her, and she was just footloose and fancy free, having a great time. But I thought, well, that kind of is an interesting way of bringing kids in and making it a safe space and just making sure that they can listen if it's done in the proper way, and it needs to be planned out and you need to practice it, and there needs to be some groundwork laid out for that before it can happen.
You know, another thing,
I worked with some of the students who didn't take it seriously, but
you got to kind of con them. I used to take, I got shells. I love Hawaii. I like the island of Kauai in particular. And I collected a bunch of shells and things off the beach and put them in a bag and took them back. And then I had a little tray of them, and we went outside in the sunlight. It was a nice spring day. I'd have the kids do it. And if it wasn't, we'd stay in, but they'd examine the little pieces, you know, and if you just look deep into those things, they start to unfold. It's like, wow, look at those and that's cool. And it calmed their mind. It got them to focus on one thing only. Mm-hmm. And then I could go, can I interrupt? Now we didn't go do the lesson, you know, and they're just like already focused, already kind of beelined into it. And sometimes they ask to keep it and they go, yeah, sure.
Well, even if you're doing mathematics or art, you can also have the kids focus in on patterns, natural patterns.
Oh, yeah. God, put up an Escher. I used to run surf videos during class, just no sound, just surf videos.
Oh, see, I'd be watching the surf videos and just totally spaced out. I would have no idea what you said.
You would think so, but you kind of look and go, that's fascinating. And then you kind of go back to your work.
Because
it's sort of watching. If the work's good. They were doing a project, and it worked out quite well. I was surprised because I thought maybe they would focus on it, but they didn't. And those that commented kind of went, that's cool, and then went back to work. It was really fascinating. But yeah, it gave them it's crazy.
Interesting.
You can't work forever.
Right.
Human mind's not built to go like grind it out.
You need to have those breaks, and I think kids need to have the breaks.
We know that.
Let's, because what happened since the pandemic, because that's when people really started to kind of rediscover just how burned out they were. And I think a lot of it has to do with this whole thing of placing sort of a social worker mentality or responsibility and therapy responsibility on top of their teaching responsibilities.
And that also can happen.
And also making them feel as though they're responsible for the learning loss, if there was any, et cetera, and trying to get kids caught back up. So
stay in your lane is the phrase that comes to mind. You know, my lane is a teacher, not therapist. I don't pretend to be a therapist. I don't want to be a therapist. If I wanted to be a therapist, I would study to be a therapist.
Exactly. So, so it's the responsibility of the school district and the community to provide the proper therapists that need to go in there,
and good news about that,
and for the community resources to help out with the mental health crisis. That's not the teacher's responsibility, no more so than it's the parent's responsibility to be the medical doctor and also the psychiatrist for their own children.
Ooh. Could you imagine your dad or mom being your psychiatrist? Oh, anyway, well, there's good news on that front. It's the landscape of schools, school-based mental health services. 96% of schools have at least one type of mental health service. 84% actually have a one-to-one service. 70 at case management and 66 at referrals. I suspect there's not enough of that. They are installed in the school system. There's just not enough of them, I believe. And teachers are getting the overage. But in 2023, the U.S. Department of Ed came up, allocated $188 million to mental health services in schools. And in Oregon, Corbett, Portland, and Douglas school districts got money, grant money. In Washington, Vancouver, and Tacoma did.
Actually, I'm going to tell you that either there is a typo in that statistic for Oregon where it says that Multnomah County got it because School District 1J, they say Multnomah County, that's actually the Hillsborough School District.
Oh.
So there's either a typo in there or something, but I would have expected it to be.
There might be a typo. Yeah, there's only three districts in the state that are getting that money, but
Right. Which is which I find interesting. So
this is really. I could see where Portland would be one of them.
But Portland isn't one of them.
Well,
and I would have expected Portland, Salem, and Eugene to have been the three biggies.
PDX, Douglas, and Corbett. Corbett was, I wonder if his grant money.
It could be.
Could have been.
So
they're trying to figure it out. And that's good because because I'm not a therapist and I want to know where to send a kid to a good one.
Well, part of my hope is not that they are using it for professional development to teachers to explain to teachers what they need to do for mental health crises. I mean, it's good for teachers to know what to do in case of a mental health crisis in their classroom.
What?
But they are not prepared. They are not trained. They are not licensed to facilitate such actions. If they want teachers to do that, then I suggest that they, A, put that in the job description, B, more than double their salary, because if you expect them to carry on the responsibilities of two intricately licensed positions, one, the position of being a licensed teacher who has mandatory reporting, and two, that of a trained psychologist.
Oh, now that is a doctoral degree.
No, it's a master's degree. You can get a doctorate. Educational psychology, it's a master's.
Oh, educational. I was going to say, generally speaking, the difference between public teacher and therapist is most therapists have advanced doctoral degrees in psychology or counseling, social work. See, the majority typically hold the bachelor's degrees in education, the master's in teaching. So, yeah.
Right. Majority of psychologists that I know of do not have a doctorate.
Oh. Oh, okay.
They're further, I mean, they tend to, if they're going to go into the academics and they're going to teach at a university or something.
But the point is they're very diverse.
Incredibly diverse.
Quite different roads. Yeah.
So where you might be paying a school psychologist $110,000 a year and a teacher $74,000 a year.
Yeah.
Now you're going to have to figure out a way to justify paying the teacher $74,000 a year while they're doing the job of $110,000 position, as well as their own position. And you're not paying them overtime, and you're gaslighting them into believing that it's their responsibility to do it. Well, the administration, who does very little and doesn't even support the teachers,
right,
gets paid even more.
Do administrators protect the staff? Not at all. And don't they know that the student suffers from this? And the students are going to suffer from that. Yeah. And so, again, you know, when administration says we're doing it for the kids, it's no, you're not. You're doing it for the teachers.
Whenever somebody says we're doing it for the children, they're lying through their teeth.
Yeah, unless they're in the classroom directly.
They don't do it for the children. Whenever they say we are family, they are manipulating you into saying that you have the responsibility of doing more than what you are supposed to be doing.
Generally speaking, I think you're right. It's hard to be an electronic family.
It is.
I don't know those people down that hall.
But let me toss this out to you, because I did a little bit of digging. And that is, we saw an increase in mental health issues prior to the pandemic.
Here.
The pandemic happened and they were exacerbated. Now,
tweaked and or changed significantly. Some things went radically different, and some things.
We had, where students were in lockdown, and this has been brought up on many platforms. Now you have students who are being abused at home, who are being told that they are now locked up with their abusers. Teachers have no reference in order to know that the students are being abused, because the students are online and they're being monitored possibly by the abusers. They don't really have an escape hatch. We don't know what's going on at home. Students are not required to show their faces because of different socioeconomic issues or family issues or whatever. So, because there was a lot of debate around that, I remember. And I know that when I did my one-on-ones with my students, they would almost all show me their faces and where they were, and we would be able to talk. But that's in an alternative situation.
That's a good point. A therapist works one-on-one. And here's another aspect. Therapists work with families.
I'm
a teacher. How am I going to do that? How am I going to communicate with the family about the mental health issues of their student son? No, thank you. Yeah.
But as we've already brought up in the past, when we've talked about technology, more than 2 hours a day on a computer screen goes into the realm of heavy depression for students. I mean, you can't have that much time on there. And you think about who are the students that have the greatest mental health issues. Those are the ones who tend to be really focused in on their screen for their cell phone. They're really into their TikTok, their Snapchat, their Insta, their whatever they are doing. And that becomes their second life. And we also have bullying that's going on at the same time. And teachers cannot be, we can't be on top of the bullying. We can do what we can. Case in point, a teacher and an administrator went to a parent to tell them that their child was bullying students with their phone. They needed to remove the phone. The parent refused and said that their child was unsafe because their child was the one being bullied, but their child was the instigator of all the bullying that was happening. And so you're dealing with all these different issues. And I've heard some of these kids, and it's like, oh my, I feel like we're dealing with pre-tweens in many cases.
It's a brave new world. You know, I knew bullying back in the day. You could only be bullied when you were at the school. You couldn't be bullied at 2 a.m. You know, no one could post anything. And you go to school the next morning and everyone's like, yeah, no, thank you. It's very complicated.
Yeah.
I like to share my wisdom and I work on my mind and my serenity and all that stuff. And you know, like I said, I taught yoga, but geez, man, if you get a lesson going, I did one of these SEL lessons as a guest teacher a couple of times. It's like, I know how to do them and I kind of had to muster up the energy to do it, but it's like, I wasn't really into it. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, oh, okay. And I'm sure they picked that up. I mean, I didn't really understand the lesson per se, but we worked with it and I tried my best, but I think they probably picked up. It's like, yeah, even he doesn't think it's really great. It's like, because it was curriculum, you know, I had to follow the instructions. I didn't generally do that, but yeah. I mean, so are we all supposed to read from a book? Delivering mental health care through curriculum? I don't know.
Well,
it's so bizarre.
What got me was the fact that they had people who were so out of touch with their own students creating curriculum for SEL.
Yeah.
And telling other teachers, this is how you need to be doing it. And they had no clue who the audience was.
Yeah. The use of curriculum transcended the ability to use it.
Well, it came almost like they were doing some kind of like a TV sketch show in order to get the kids to do this stuff. And the kids are like, what? And so we talked to the kids and the kids don't how do you teach self-awareness? I think that's one of the biggest things that they really need to do with students. Teach self-awareness. Yeah. We need to teach self-confidence. We need to teach kids about how to keep themselves safe. And how do we do that? And we can teach some facets of that, but maybe there needs to be like a psychology class for all students at the freshman level, maybe in the 6th, 7th, and 8th grades. Because once kids start going into puberty and their brains start to do things, that's when we really need to target it. When you get kids into a class and you're starting to do it in high school, it could be very well too late for them to really figure a lot of that stuff out because they can't really implement it.
Yeah, they're changing so fast. And we know that their development is based individually. I've known kids who are like 18 that were, geez, man, prepared, like kind of scary. I know you're only 18. Mm-hmm. And I've known kids who are 18 who are like 12, 10. It's like, holy cow. So you got to kind of keep getting it to them, keep doing the curriculum and the mindfulness and be aware of yourself and things like that. And that's just good living. I mean, and helping them out with things, you know, don't interrupt, you know, things like that.
If there was a way to scaffold the skills for mental health and maybe start in the younger years where we just talk about, you know, what's self-confidence? What is it like? What is bullying look like? What's the difference between bullying and just being fun with your friends, just messing with each other?
Well, when I was that age, I wanted to know that I wasn't a bad person because I had bad thoughts.
Right. And you want to make sure
bad thoughts are like sins. It's like, whoa, I'm just sitting up a storm here.
Well, not only that, but you also want to know that you're not a freak.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I think that's one of the biggest things because you don't know what's happening. All these things are going on.
Yeah.
You just feel so vitally insecure. But how do teachers support that and how without breaking boundaries?
Well, yeah.
That's the biggie.
And you're right. It has to be focused. Mm-hmm. I don't think this can be a lesson that every teacher is giving at the beginning of second period to their classes. You know, that doesn't work. And the second thing is, it's got to be like consistent. Mm-hmm. And it's not, because when you leave the classroom of the mindfulness and you go out there, you're going to run into the world, which is not mindful, a bit obnoxious it might be, and really, really confusing. And so that's also its own thing, you know.
But you have to remember, you only have a 1 to 14% impact.
There it is, you know. That's it. 14% if I'm rocking it.
And you had an issue with that, but...
It's true. Well, I'm just an idealistic person.
Well, it's kind of an ego thing to think that we really have a much greater impact. And perhaps on some students, we do. I mean, I've had students tell me that what I taught them played out very well for them.
Right.
But I had no effect on what happened to them once they left the building.
Right.
I had a student who would drive all of his friends to school in his mother's car without her knowledge. He had no insurance. He had no license.
Ooh.
And I said, dude, what are you doing? And he said, well, I have to get to school somehow, and they have to get to school somehow. I said, does your mama know where her car is? And he said, well, she'll figure it out. I said, doesn't she need to get to work? And he said, my dad can take her.
I know a kid who showed up to school. He showed up to school because I had an attendance policy in a stolen car for 2 weeks. Yeah. And what happened was he had to give it back to the owner and apologize, and he got off. And I went, this kid's like Teflon. Drove a car for 2 weeks that wasn't his.
Holy
he didn't have a license
cow.
Either.
Right? Wow. But
and they want us to be therapists.
But I think that we have this, and I don't want to say that we've gotten off track, but the very notion that teachers should be taking on more responsibility than curriculum delivery is shameful. If districts can find it in their budget, they're constantly coming up with all these new programs to fund
in the budget,
that they claim that they got through different monies. Hey, with the COVID funds that my district had, they put in more administration and one teaching assistant for the entire district. And it was supposed to be direct services to students. There were no direct services to students because every one of those other positions that they put in there were central office, and they went around to talk to teachers, but they almost all spoke to administrators to figure out what to do, and then it would trickle down from the administrators, which never happened in our building. The administrator simply told one or two teachers what they wanted to do, and that was it.
Mid-level management.
It was absolutely pointless. They went around celebrating how wonderful it was, and then they complained because the teachers weren't working hard enough to get everything done for the students like they should have.
It's not quite unlike office space.
It's very much like office space. As I've said before, schools are the new corporations.
They are very much run like that. Yeah, they are. It's sad, but true. That's pervaded in there. It's got infiltrated, rather. Yeah.
Right.
The other thing about it is that there are certain teachers that understand the practices, you know, and the mindfulness, you know, you can tell in any profession, you know, there's always somebody who kind of gets it. And there's some people that don't, and that's fine too. It's not the measure of a quality of person, but if you're required to do that and you're not necessarily apt at it, it's kind of a problem. And if they put me in a math class every day, I'd be one upset guy.
Yeah. What I'm thinking is, with professional development, if they start telling you what you need to start doing in classes in order to help with students' mental health, it's fine to listen to it, but you are by no means obligated – to follow through with anything that sounds like it's in any way providing any type of therapy or with a therapeutic component. Your job is to teach. And it would be fine to get up and walk out of that professional development simply because it has nothing to do with your professional development if these are things that you are already well aware of, because in your teacher training program, you've already gone through these things and they've already taught you the boundaries. Now, they might be upset with you, but legally, that is not in your job description. And they are under the legal obligation to provide the proper services. And you ask them where, when they are going to have you licensed, and they are going to pay for your licensing, which they're not going to do.
No, they're not.
So you provide the safe environment for the students. You tell the students you can hear them, but you're going to have to find the proper resource for them. And your district or your building should have a catalog or the person or persons to which they can go to. Now, here's one of the other issues. I had a student who came in a huge, huge, huge crisis, was almost at a point of self-elimination.
Right. A crisis that any adult would have a crisis with.
Right. So I said, hold on. And his mother was very, very worried. And she was there. And I went in and I found his counselor. And I said, excuse me. So-and-so is here, and it's a 911 red siren, red alarm crisis, because she was talking to somebody else. She looked at me and said, I'm sorry, but I'm talking to a parent right now. You're just going to have to wait. I said, okay, so what should I tell this kid to do? Because he wants to go home, and I'm trying to hold him here. And she said, well, can't he just go home? I said, do you understand what I'm trying to tell you? She said, excuse me, I'm going to close my door now, but I'm in a meeting with a parent. And I can't say anything more because of confidentiality.
Yeah.
So I find another counselor who says, you need to go talk to his counselor. I said, I did. And this is what they said. And they said, okay, I will take it. And I said, thank you. And they took it. But they were angry with me too. Well, I'm sorry. I do not have control because I'm trying to run a class at the same time. But the kid hunted me down because I'm the only person on that campus that they feel safe speaking to. And then when I saw them later, the mother said, thank you, but he just wanted to talk to you. And I said, I'm not equipped for that.
Yeah.
I am just not equipped. If you want me in on that meeting, I can figure out how I can be in on that meeting, but I can't. I have another class, you know, I have all these other things to do and, you know, I adore your child, but, you know, there are certain things and I'm very concerned. I'm still in touch with that student, by the way, who has called me many times and throughout the years. And this was well over a decade ago. So yeah. But the thing is,
well, I'm wondering if I was a counselor and someone came to me with an emergency, I would tell the person, and, you know, I'm sorry, but I have to attend to something very, very important. I will call you back. I would think as a counselor, you'd really want that. You know, go, okay, I'm here. You know, I'll do it. Yeah.
No, I just have to say that there are a lot of counselors who are so focused on what's comfortable for them and what's in the immediate, and they're not going to go and deal with something that's an emergency because they don't want to have to deal with it.
You also need to
judge the counselor because I remember I had one counselor and we were talking about a student who we suspected was using. And so I was talking to the alternative teacher with the counselor, and the teacher said, okay, the kid's not here today. And I said, well, the next time the kid shows up, test them. It'll be a random test. Just do a random UA and just do it then. And he said, okay, great. And then the counselor called mom to say, we think your child is using, so the next time he comes in, we're going to give him a UA. And I looked at the counselor and I said, why would you do that? Why would you do that? And she said, well, I think the parent has a right to know. And I said, the parent is in on it.
Oh, wow. Wow. Oh, God. Okay.
And then the kid showed up that afternoon and I got that kid right into a UA because the parent said that the kid had already left for school. And so the kid walked through the door like 3 minutes later. So I knew that there was no way that they could have gotten another sample. I escorted him down and we got that sample right then. But I had to explain to the counselor, the random UA does not need the parental approval because they've already signed a contract at the very beginning of that student being in there. But we have all these different resources that are there. And sometimes the resources that we have don't understand the ramifications or the implications of what it is that they're doing to the students. And so when it comes to mental health, we're dealing with suicide, we're dealing with drug use, we're dealing with alcohol abuse, we're dealing with an abusive household, we're dealing with an abusive relationship.
Adolescence. It's a hard time in life anyway.
And bullying.
And then it gets really serious sometimes. And bullying is something else. It wears the soul down.
Ugh. But bullying among staff members in teaching is also pervasive.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
There's a great deal of it. I mean, you suffered a great deal of it. You really did.
I think so.
And I did as well. And I've seen other people being bullied. And when I've called out those bullies, they double down. And when you explain to admin doubles down because they like the bullies.
Well, it makes sense to them. That's a greasy wheel. We got to oil that sucker.
Well, it's not that. It's whoever is in the cool club.
And if you're not in the cool club, you're a greasy wheel. That was anyway the point I was
squeaky
making.
Wheel. You mean? Or greasy.
Yeah, or squeaky wheel. I'm sorry, squeaky wheel. Yeah, okay. It needed the grease, man. It needed the oil. Yeah, it's just like, you're not going with the program.
But if we could solve this by doing some kind of like having some kind of like once a week psychology class or something of different things that kids could do starting in the fifth or sixth grade, and then start building on that because it would be part of their adult development. And or their whatever you want to call it,
but we teach anatomy.
Pardon?
We teach bones and muscles. That's right. That's seventh grade biology, I believe.
But we also teach in a sense, well, in health class,
right?
We talk about peer pressure. We talk about the use of drugs and alcohol and relationships. And how to get in and out. We do role playing. We do all kinds of things. But if we also had sort of like a school psychologist who was teaching once a week in each building and just working with students, and that way they would become a resource for those students so those students could see them. And they would have some times when they would be able to meet with those students, or if there were some kind of, I know that if a school has a clinic on site, that there's usually a counselor that's in there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or two that work through the county or whatever that they can meet with. But that doesn't always happen. There are schools that don't have those resources. And that's where you're going to find some real issues.
Without someone there to triage care, you're really at a loss. I don't know, triage psychiatric care. It's hard to do. Mm-hmm. They do. They know it. I don't.
Right. Yeah. And yet we still have administrators who determine that we are the ones in the classroom who need to be doing the assessments and the mental health care for the students.
Yeah.
And that's very difficult because you're still trying to work out with the number of students that you have with whatever your goals already are. And then you've just added, you didn't add a layer to it. You just added an entirely new system.
Yeah, that was it. You just gave us another profession.
Exactly. And it's so, like,
well, now we want you to do what plumbers do. What?
Well, here's what I figured out. Okay. In the U.S., the median salary for a teacher with a master's is $61,660 a year, which comes out to about $45.40 an hour. For a school counselor, like a school psych, the average salary is $82,180 or $60.44 per hour. Now, that average, the difference there is $900 a week, approximately. So, if districts are willing to put something else on the plate for teachers, like this system, but they do it with supports,
right?
Not with this rinky-dink, we're going to throw this at you, you're going to figure it out, and then you're going to do it.
Yeah, no. It's an extra duty. Yeah.
No, 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 not our job. You're going to give us the supports. You're going to help us work through it. You're going to be able to monitor us. You're going to give us everything that we need. And you're also going to have administrators do the same thing. And administrators will be held accountable for this training and for the implementation of it, as well as the accreditation of that training. Then we should be, then teachers should be getting a raise of $900 a week.
And they should have 6 hours added to each of their days. So they go on a 30-hour day. That's the point. They gave them so many duties. Teachers have been overloaded for decades.
It's true.
It's so, you know, true.
I don't know that I brought this up. I was watching there back in the 60s. There was a book that was written. It was called Up the Down Staircase. I can't remember the name of the author, but it was made into a movie with Sandy Dennis and Gene Stapleton. And I watched it the other night. Students haven't changed that much. Students have not changed that much. What has changed are the environments and the expectations. We have made students so that they don't have to fight very hard for what they have. The parents are fighting for the students more than the students are fighting for the students because the parents take care of everything. When you hand the students everything that they want, if a student's having trouble with the teacher, my mother did this. When a student is having troubles with the teacher, let the work with the student to figure it out on their own to see what they can do. My mother called one of my teachers because there was a whole plot to this whole thing. My mom called her. She stops in the middle of the, I'm sitting there and she finds me in the hallway with my friends. And she said, "Your mother called me last night." I said, "Excuse me? My mother called you?" She said, "Yeah." And so we went and we talked about it. She finally apologized to me. That, in a sense, is a little bit different. But still, I was furious with my mother. But today we have kids who expect their parents to solve their problems for them, and we're not teaching them autonomy. We're taking away the whole concept of autonomy. We've taken autonomy away from teachers to be able to decide what goes on in their classrooms. They're going to be doing X, Y, and Z. We've taken autonomy away from children because the parents want to write their papers because the parents determine that their kids are too stupid and they have no, absolutely no trust, no respect for their children to figure out what they need to do and how they need to do their lives. And maybe that's part of the mental health issue that we have, is the fact that there is no self-concept anymore. I mean, I think that it's bigger than just what happens at the schools. I think it needs to be happening with the community.
114%.
That's right. That's right.
You Holy pointed cow. It out. It is bigger.
Gosh. So I know we're not going to solve this, but there is a huge blurred line between what teachers are responsible for and what the expectations are as far as mental health goes.
Yeah, and I would say if you're a mental health provider, then the do no harm motto mm-hmm. would apply. Well, I have that too, and you know, I can't pretend to be a therapist. I think that might do some harm.
Definitely. So
yeah.
Okay, so let's wrap it up, and then next week, what is our blurred line for next week, Philip?
It is sports, and how do they affect students? Good, bad, great, ugly?
There we go. Sports participation.
Yeah, sports in high school and schools. Access from alternatives, things like that, yeah.
Excellent. Okay. Well, until then, y'all have a great, wonderful week. We've missed you. Philip, you have a great week, too.
You too.
And until then, keep your feet on the ground while you reach for the stars. Adios.
Aloha.